Welcome back. Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the drought-stricken North Island of New Zealand, which we haven't had for like 60 years or something like that, I believe. Yeah, it's tough being a farmer living off the land when you don't know nothing about how the land actually works because nobody's that smart anymore to live naturally and permaculturally, as it were. All right, Kevin Moore is my guest. Welcome back. Did you want to keep talking about Easter Island for a second or nah?
Just briefly, again, back to this book, The Easy Way. I've written a section about there's a picture of, I don't know if you can get that, but there's a picture of Easter Island, the statues. I do write about that. Roggeveen went there in 1722. And he found the remains of this society, which had collapsed because it had basically destroyed its life support system. And this is where we're headed. We're actually living in an Easter Island culture. And I said that to my local council last time I spoke to them. This is the society that we have. Oh, we just keep building. We just keep borrowing money to build stuff. Now, I mean, they're going to build a new art gallery, a new centre. I mean, it's the same everywhere you look almost, except in parts of the world which have gone bankrupt. They're not building much in Greece or Spain these days, but those parts of the world which are still operating reasonably normally, well, in this abnormal system, are still able to fund ridiculous building projects. So it's an Easter Island culture. We're just going to carry on doing this until we can't, until we starve ourselves to death or the money runs out or the energy runs out. And the reason we're doing this, and this is really important, is the economic model. Now, most people don't understand the money system whereby money is created out of thin air, doesn't actually exist. Until 1971, there was a link to the gold standard. Well, Nixon basically decoupled gold from the gold standard, and from then, and particularly from the 1990s onward, when Clinton repealed the Steel-Glass law and basically said, oh, no, yeah, banks can operate as investment, they can do hedge funds, they can do anything, right? And so we end up with this whole Ponzi scheme thing. But when money is created at interest, where does the interest come from? Well, the answer is it's from the money that's already in existence. I detail that, and anybody that's interested can watch Money as Debt or on it. There are lots of great videos on all of this stuff.
But the bottom line is, it's mathematically impossible to pay stuff back with stuff that isn't there.
Absolutely, totally. Yeah, and nobody knows how big this whole derivative market is. I mean, I hear the figure $250 billion now, like $1,000 trillion in derivatives which are floating around the world. And everybody says, oh, but the Dow's reached a new level high. Oh, wonderful. You know, what's backing it? Nothing.
Yeah, like, holy Dow!
Yeah. And these worshippers of the market think that this is marvelous. I mean, this is the biggest bubble in all of history, which is being created. It's just like the tulip bubble of 1637, where the price of tulips went up and up and up because people thought, oh, yeah, you know, this is a great way to speculate. And it's all speculative. But just coming back to the whole basis of this economic model, you have to keep growing. Now, Albert Bartlett did a wonderful presentation called Arithmetic, Population and Energy, many years ago, and it's online. Anybody wants to look that up, it's great. Because if something grows at 7%, then it doubles every 10 years. And we need this economic growth, so we double. And then we double again. So we've got this piece of paper, and we just keep opening it out. Well, you know, this is all very well, just to keep doubling and doubling. And then if I had a bigger piece of paper, it would just sort of double and double and double and keep. But the problem is, whoops, I just dropped it. Here is the Earth. Oh, well, gosh, it's finite. Doesn't get bigger every day. It's the same size as it was 4.5 billion years ago. And so we can't.
How could it possibly be the same size, though? I mean, when photosynthesis happens, energy gets drawn by the sun into a leaf, and then the leaf drops and it builds up and then becomes more soil. So wouldn't the Earth be growing daily because of just plant matter falling to the Earth?
No, actually, it's slightly smaller. No, I mean, the sunlight is not matter. That's energy. The sunlight.
No, I'm saying that leaves turn sunlight.
CO2 in the atmosphere into leaves. Yeah, CO2 from the atmosphere, taken out of the atmosphere, and formed into carbohydrates. And then when the leaves rot or get eaten, it goes back to CO2. So this is a natural cycle. So it's CO2 in, CO2 out at the same rate over a long period of time. Hence, we had this level CO2 level for, you know, for centuries.
How do compost bins work? Because, you know, you put organic matter in there and then you wind up with compost, and that organic matter hasn't really changed a whole lot. It's actually just more matter that's there.
It's been broken down from large molecules into small molecules, basically.
But the point is those original trees that you've gotten the fruit from are still growing themselves and they're still producing more fruit, and that fruit grows, right?
Yeah, but by taking out of the atmosphere, Vince, is taking CO2 out of the air, which is what photosynthesis is, reducing the CO2 level. But
I thought photosynthesis had to do with sunlight, not carbon.
No, the sunlight gives the plant the energy to trap the carbon. Right? It's energy. Without energy, nothing happens. So the sunlight hits the leaf. It activates the chlorophyll in the leaf, and that captures the sunlight. It's a magnesium porphyrin ring. That doesn't mean anything to you being a non-chemist. Traps that energy. The plant uses that energy to capture the CO2 to build up.
Could you explain what that thing was? You said something about a ring of some.
Magnesium is the iron in the middle of a porphyrin ring. It's just the structure, chemical structure.
Oh yeah. The chlorophyll porphyrin rings are the same as the red blood cell kind of porphyrin rings, except we've got iron as opposed to magnesium in the middle, and all the elements outside them are the same.
Yeah. And when you've got a metal iron trapped in one of these rings, it's able to capture energy and store it temporarily. So that's how. But these are side issues. I really want to get back onto this economic stuff because that's really important. So we've got this model which requires constant growth. Well, if you haven't got an increasing energy supply, you can't have constant growth. I'm a member of the board of ASPO, the Association for the Study of Peak Oil, and I have been aware for over a decade that we were going to be in trouble in the early years of the 21st century from the point of view of energy. Now, so we're actually in the point now of a declining energy supply. So that means we have to have economic contraction. Now, it hasn't hit New Zealand really badly just yet, but in Greece and Spain, where places where they've got no oil at all, they have to buy oil, where they're creating money via the Ponzi scheme to buy their oil and getting themselves deeper and deeper into debt, and everything's going under. I mean, it's happening in Britain. It's happening in America. America peaked in oil extraction in 1970. And I don't care what anybody says about shale gas, it is not going to solve the energy problem. Now, if we look at this situation globally, we've gone from the early 1900s when we were using bugger all oil, like, you know, 500,000 barrels a day. The energy shock of the 1970s, and we're now past peak and energy supply is going down. So this is where the economic system starts to break down. You can't have a growing economy if you've got a declining energy supply. Well, this is peak oil, by the way, and this is a term which some people are familiar with. Well, the peak of extraction, that's sucking oil out of the ground, was between 2005 and 2008. And I warned the local council, I warned everybody about this, and they said, oh, no, you're too gloomy, that will never happen. Well, it has happened. And this is why the global economic system is now starting to collapse. And the rate of collapse will increase. What's really, really important is the thing called energy return on energy invested. Now, way, way, way back, when Spindletop was drilled back in the early 1900s, you just drilled down a few hundred feet, out came the oil. You spent one unit of energy and you got back 50 or 100. And as we've progressed along this curve, we're using more and more energy to get back less. And we're now getting to the point of falling off the energy on energy return, invested on energy return curve. We're drilling like 200 kilometers off the coast. We're fracking. We're drilling. These are last desperate attempts to keep this system going. It's quite scary if you actually know what's going on. All the cheap oil has been gone years ago. Coal, same thing. All the high-quality coal has been burnt.
I thought fracking is what happened on the land, and they do drilling off the land on the sea and stuff.
Yeah, no, I just said these are two examples of the desperation to keep this thing going. We wouldn't be drilling 200 kilometres off the coast of Taranaki if there was plenty of oil. We wouldn't be fracking, which is drilling, fracturing the rocks to get out the last pockets of oil and gas if there was plenty of oil. So these people say, oh, no, don't worry about it. There's loads of oil. It's the big lie. Again, it's all about keeping up confidence because this whole economic system requires confidence. So we are actually on a path that takes us to economic collapse, environmental collapse, mass starvation, and extinction of most mammals on this planet if we keep going the way we do. That's the reality which people do not want to face. It's too scary.
Now, I saw a textbook that was made in the 70s that said peak oil would mean we would run out of oil by 1994.
No, never. No, you see, that's a misunderstanding of peak oil. Peak oil is not running out of oil. We will never run out of oil. It's the maximum extraction, how quickly you can pump it out the ground. So that was increasing over a period of time.
You believe oil to be a fossil fuel, right?
Well, it is. It's not I believe. It is. It is a fossil fuel.
Okay. So how could something be a finite resource that is unlimited, as you're saying now?
No, I didn't say it's unlimited.
You said we'll never run out of oil.
Yes, because we won't be able to extract the oil that's in the ground.
But that's running out of oil, isn't it?
But running out means that something's gone, right? No, we're not going to run out. What we will be, we'd be unable to get it out the ground. See, what happens with an oil well, you start sucking out, and it's easy to get out at first, and then it gets harder and harder. After a while, instead of it spurting out under natural pressure, you have to install a pump, and then you're pumping away. You've seen these rockers, you know, they're very emblematic of Texas. You know, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, all these old places where they were sucking oil. It goes right back to Titusville, 1859, where Colonel Drake just drilled down with some water boring equipment. And I've forgotten the exact depth. It wasn't very much. It was less than 100 feet, right, 30 meters. And there was the oil. Well, nowadays, you think about Deepwater Horizon. They were drilling in 1,500 meters of water, and they drilled down about another 5 kilometers to get to this pocket of oil. The energy required to do that is massive, and then they lost control of it. Difficult. So you get to the point where there is oil still there.
Hold on. That's a complete fabrication. There are two types of oil drilling, and what they were practicing in the Deepwater Horizon was a Russian pioneered form of oil drilling called deep core drilling, where you get down to the 60,000 foot mark, and they found that the oil reserves are much, much larger than the surface bubbles of oil, to the point where many people who've seen these reserves say that they are oceans of oil deep beneath the Earth's surface.
Yeah, Vince, that's the big lie that they want you to believe. Now, the reality was, the reason that blew was the pressure, because as you go down, every 10 meters you go down, that's one atmosphere of pressure, and they lost control of it. The pressure was too great for them to get it. And there's no oceans of oil down there. That's a huge lie. This whole thing about abiotic oil is just complete nonsense. It breaks the laws of chemistry. But they want you to believe this. They want you to believe there's plenty of oil. Otherwise, you're going to say, oh, I'm not going to run my car anymore. I'm not going to do this. Everything is to keep you deluded and believing in the system. And that's just another example of the same thing.
Well, hold on. The oil industry has been saying that oil is a very scarce resource, and they've been promoting the peak oil thing as well. Rockefeller Oil has been shutting down refineries and buying out their competition all the time in order to make a bottleneck on production so that they can put the petrol prices up.
Now, that's a big myth. The reality is geology. I mean, it's like you go and buy a bottle of beer, right, and you drink it. Well, halfway through, it's half gone. That's it. Sorry. You know, the bottle doesn't keep refilling. And it's the same with the Earth. These oil reserves were produced between 90 and 140 million years ago. they're finite. And it's not...
How have they been able to say it's between 90 and some odd million years ago? Carbon dating only goes to 50,000 years max. No,
carbon dating only goes back 5,000 years. I thought it only went back
50,000.
No, 5,000. Beyond 5,000, it gets unreliable. But you go to argon, potassium dating, whatever. I mean, uranium. There's all kinds of other radioactive isotopes going back, 4.5 billion years. You can age the rocks, and this is what geologists do. And they say, oh, yeah, no, these rocks are of this age, blah, blah. There are likely to be oil reserves here. We can't be sure, but it looks like a good place to drill, which is what they did. Well, in the past, it was very easy. Masses of oil all over the place. I mean, as I said, Colonel Drake, you just drilled down a few feet with some water boring equipment and you found oil. But United States oil extraction peaked in 1917. It's in decline ever since. That's a fact.
That was during the oil price shock, wasn't it? When oil prices suddenly went up hugely during the 70s.
Yeah, but that was because of political embargo by the Arab nations, who were really pissed off at Western support for Israel. So they said, right, we're not going to supply you with oil, and that pushed the price up. Now, one thing that kept this thing going was the discovery of oil in the North Sea and Alaska. So Britain was able to keep its Ponzi scheme going for a bit longer by sucking North Sea oil out. Well, that's now mostly gone. Britain peaked in its extraction about 2000. And if you look at the data, they're falling off the cliff. Alaska peaked quite some time ago. There is no more easy oil. That's the reality which people refuse to accept. They refuse to accept that all the easy oil is gone. They say, no, there must be more oil because their lives are dependent on it. Well, wishful thinking is not going to change reality, I can tell you. I mean, I've studied geology. I'm a member, as I said, of the ASPO Executive Board for New Zealand. I know this stuff. So this is no myths or fabrications here.
You do realize appeal to authority is a logical fallacy, right?
Look, the Earth doesn't give a shit about humans, right? I'm giving you the facts.
We can't swear under FCC regulations, unfortunately. and we're coming to a break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
All right. Hey, this is a good way to go on the break. The Earth doesn't give a frack about humans. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, you do realise cancer can grow infinitely if it didn't kill its host. Isn't that interesting? Back in a minute. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with my very special guest, Kevin Moore. Now, it occurs to me that you've got a massive presentation that is planned for this interview, and it prohibits really the possibility of having a conversation at the same time that you want to present and finish your planned degree. So why don't you go ahead and try and sum it up? Are there many more pages left on that little...
No, there's only two more, actually. Only two more pages, Vince. This is the next one. Almost everything that central government and local government does makes everything that matters worse. All right? Because they're basically there to keep this Ponzi scheme going. And I mean, so you've got all these local authorities. It's pretty much the same everywhere in the world. They're all borrowing money, at interest from moneylenders. And it's all about building stuff and blah, 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 and so-called development, whether it's a casino or artworks or blah, it just goes on and on and on. And basically gobbling up finite fossil resource and converting them to CO2. So we said, well, why is this happening? And we really need to understand the structure of society in order to understand why this is happening. So I put this is the last page of actually stuff that I've done. The structure of society is we've got the global elites. Then you've got your corporations and money lenders. Then you've got governments. Then you've got your enforcers or opportunists. And then right at the bottom of the heap, you've got your ordinary people. So I kind of thought you got that. Now,
hold it up a little bit higher.
Yeah. So your power goes downwards from your global elites through the corporations, through the governments, and then you've got the people that are enforcing all this stuff, and plus the opportunists that take advantage of this situation, and at the bottom, and then wealth transfers upwards. Now, I said everything is Orwellian. You see, so we have this trickle-down theory that if we give tax breaks to rich people, then the money is going to flow down to the bottom. Well, I mean, the system has never been that way, and it never will be, because the whole purpose of this whole system is to transfer wealth upwards from ordinary people to the global elites. And we're seeing this now in the last stages of the kind of a loot-the-till economy, where you've got all these CEOs that get $1 million bonus or $2 million, you know, it just goes on and on and on. No accountability anywhere in the system because the government's regulators are not regulating. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's a Security Exchange Commission or Department of Agriculture or you name it. Every one of these, they're all basically bought and paid for by the global corporations and the moneylenders to ensure that this whole loot and pollute economy can keep going. But it won't anyway, because we're buggering up the environment and we're running out of resources. I mean, a good example of this would be gold. Now, if you were lucky enough to have come to New Zealand in the mid-1800s, you could have gone down to Otago, rummaged around and found a few lumps of gold and got rich. It was all good. Wait, you try and find lumps of gold in Otago now. There aren't any. You know, same with...
A mate of mine who lives on the west coast of the South Island, every now and again when he's short of cash, he goes to a river near where he is and panhandles for a bit and finds a few flecks, and then he goes and pays his rent with them.
That's right, yeah. And this is what's really interesting. If you look at the price of gold, you know, about 1930 or so, the price of gold was about $30 an ounce. And then... I don't know if you're aware of the Great Depression that followed on from the Wall Street crash in 1929. So the US government said, oh, wow, look, things are really bad. We want you to give us your gold, right? And we'll give you $30 an ounce for your gold. So all these people handed in their gold, got their $30. Following week, the US government said, ah, right, well, we'll revalue gold now at $35 an ounce. I mean, this is exactly what happened. This is exactly what governments do. They continually scam the people. Well, look at the price of gold now. It's currently about $1,580. So you go from $30 to, you know, $1,580. Well, we're talking about, you know, massively.
Have you noticed that it's impossible to scam people if they don't trust you?
Yeah, but people are trusting. This is the whole point.
Exactly.
Oh, it's government. It must be right. Oh, it's official. Oh, it must be right. I better buy this T-shirt because it's the official rugby T-shirt. I better drink this beer because it's the official beer that I've got to drink if I'm going to go to this World Cup event. I mean, sorry, but people are basically stupid. It's sad, but that's the way they are. They've been trained to be stupid, so they are. And you try and get them to think outside the box. Oh, no, 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 you can't do that, you know? It's just the nature of people.
They have to have their head cracked open by a baton of some kind before it knocks them out of their trust in government. I mean, that's what happened to me. I used to be a massive believer in all of this stuff. And then through being arrested and then having the cops make fun of you while they're arresting you and calling your names and stuff like that, and then making up evidence delivering it to the court as though it's real and stuff. You know, like, I think everybody should have that really harrowing, horrible life-destroying experience, because it turns you into an awake person who knows that if you have a uniform on, means you probably can't be trusted.
You're not saying that police lie in court, are you?
They constantly lie in court.
And the judges make misjudgments? No, that could never happen in our society. Yeah. I mean, that's the point. The police are there to enforce this whole... It's basically an imperialist system. That's their job, right? So, you know, if they're required to lie, they lie. That's just
the laws that are being passed aren't even laws. They're statutes, which means they're lies to begin with. How exactly do you enforce something that's a lie without being a chronic liar?
Well, it's very, very easy. And I'll tell you how they do it. You see, now we here have a thing called the Midweek, which is a free newspaper. It comes here, get posted every week into your mailbox. And there's the council's 7 days report telling us what a wonderful job they're doing, how absolutely fabulous everything is, and it's all going to get better because of what they're doing. Well, people believe this.
See, I want to have a front page story. Fox claims he's doing a good job guarding the hen house.
Vince,
egg on his face and everything, you know.
I have seen so many DVDs and documentaries. I mean, I sound like an elitist, you know-it-all, if you like, but I've actually studied all this stuff for over a decade, and I do know. I mean, going back to this oil situation, now, Colin Campbell and Jean Lahaire wrote an article for Scientific American in 1998, The End of Cheap Oil. They were oil geologists. They worked for Total. And I think Colin Campbell worked for Shell at one stage, just the same as M. King Hubbard. These are insiders. They study the stuff. They know what's going on. They raise the alarm. And everybody says, oh, no, that will never happen. No, that's just a conspiracy. Well, the conspiracy, of course, is central government. This is the whole point. It's this whole keep everybody dumbed down, this whole Orwellian situation where people believe in complete nonsense. Oh, I'll go and vote National because they're going to give us a better, brighter future.
Yeah. Excuse me. That's why I had made a different National banner, and it says irrational as opposed to National. And that's basically what the system has really turned into, is it's made people so freaking gullible and in plain denial of reality that even when it hits them over the head, they still refuse to believe it.
Oh, totally. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons I've actually pulled back from activism. I spent a lot of time and energy. I stood for Parliament for the Direct Democracy Party, did all this stuff. I've stood for local elections. People don't want to know. They don't get it. So I'm basically now doing my own preparations and coming back to this whole thing about food. If you haven't got clean water to drink and you haven't got food, well, you're pretty much gone in a week. That's it. And that's exactly where we are headed. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, how many jet skis you've got or whatever else, that you can't eat the jet ski. And coming back to the gold thing, now a lot of people say, yeah, well, buy gold. There is a protection against the collapse of fiat currencies. I don't know if you understand that term, fiat. Fiat means just an ounce, basically. It's declared. And the government says, well, this piece of paper is worth $20. Well, it's just a piece of paper, of course, but it's given value, you know, because people accept it.
See, now, fiat to me literally translates as making shit up.
yeah. But, I mean, this is the system. And this is why the global elites are getting a bit scared of what's happening in places like Greece and Spain, because when you've got 27% general unemployment rate and you've got 60% youth unemployment rate, well, society as it has known is not going to hold together for much longer.
Unemployed people have time to think. Employed people do not.
Yes. Oh, exactly. Yeah. Keep on the rat race. Keep in that treadmill. Just keep doing the same thing. Don't think for yourself.
I thought about a strange draconian policy of mandatory annual unemployment. Like, for once in your life, you have to be unemployed for an entire year and think about who you are and what you want to do with your life and study things online or whatever. That happened to me, and I wound up becoming a radio show host and a filmmaker and an activist out of it, which I'm still doing today.
Yes. But unfortunately, a sad thing, but most young people are dumbed down by the system. You see them walking along the streets with their cell phones and they're text messaging one another, almost walking into lampposts because they've been caught up. What I call this whole thing is a web of deceit. And most people are trapped in that web of deceit. They are fed nonsense constantly by the mainstream media. In New Zealand, it's TVNZ, TV2, TV3. It's just constant distraction, from anything that actually matters.
Did you notice, like, just recently, Kevin, how our power companies are now up for sale to massive foreign corporates, and the lead headline story is "Man gets eaten by a shark."
Yes, exactly. I turn on my.
And it was a hit story for like 4 days. They come at his funeral and everything.
Yeah, once you understand what the game is, you can see straight through it. But most people don't want to. They want to keep believing in this whole fantasy world that they're going to get richer for doing nothing, basically. And it's not going to happen. I'm actually very lucky because at the moment, where I'm living, if I turn a switch, the light comes on. If I turn a tap, water comes out. If I turn another tap, hot water comes out. This is actually a life of great luxury compared to about 4 billion people who are living on this planet. And the only reason I can have these great luxuries is because we are stealing from the rest of the world. That's the reality of it. And this is particularly true of America. The whole American empire is based on theft of resources and financial scams. The same for Britain. You know, this great empire. Well, the reason that Britain got rich was they went off to India and they looted the place.
That's how the Roman Empire got rich as well. Every new country they invaded and conquered, they would steal all the gold, steal all the silver, yep. steal all the resources and the best land and things like that. And the reason the empire collapsed is because there was nothing left to steal. They were trying to maintain all the stuff that they'd stolen, and they couldn't because they weren't able to steal anything more. They'd already taken it all.
it is a brilliant system where you have an army that steals gold, and you use the gold that you've just stolen to pay the army. Basically, it's a brilliant system, but it only works as long as there's gold.
You know, isn't that called free enterprise?
Well, as I said before, we actually have a loot and pollute system. So that and this is basically promoted by governments, local government, you know, all the mayors and CEOs and all. And they say, oh, this is wonderful, you know. Be part of this thing. And this, you know, it's sale of assets. Oh, you can be part of this loot and pollute economy. But it's a huge scam and it's going to fall over. I mean, it's really interesting. We're talking about a power company which is dependent on good rainfall. Now, very interesting. I made the comment.
We're going to sell it in the middle of a drought.
I cannot predict, you know, what the rainfall is going to be later this year or whatever, but everything that I read says we're headed for greater instability. Torrents of rain when you don't need it, and then extended droughts when you do need it. So this is fascinating. As I said, right at the beginning, this whole system is not only destroying the Earth, but it's also destroying itself. The system cannot function if you just keep printing money and then, oh, quantitative easing, quantitative 1, 2, 3, 4, just keep on pouring money. And in America, I think it's about $3 billion a day that the Fed is pouring into the economy just to maintain status quo.
It's $40 billion a month in mortgage-backed securities, and they have decided that they will do that till the end of the foreseeable human existence.
Yes.
These people freaking retarded. It's like, let's try QE1. Okay, that didn't work. Let's try QE2. It's like I'm trying to cure myself of AIDS or something by cutting my left leg off, and that doesn't work. So I go, all right, let's cut off the right leg. Okay, that didn't work. Let's cut off my left arm. That didn't work. Okay, let's see if I can cut off my right arm with my one remaining right arm. There'll be nothing left to cut off.
That's one of the analogy I used to use was the doctors who were treating somebody with a poor blood supply, so they'd apply leeches, right? Oh, it's not working. Apply more leeches. And this is the society we live in.
Yeah, and the person bleeds to death from the leeches on their neck. Kind of like society, except those leeches are called politicians. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com if we don't bleed out. Yeah, yeah, and no one like me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader.
been a long time coming, yo. Yeah. But I'm here now. So what you want to do? How many dudes you really know can flow like this? Like this? Like this? Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this?
Not many, if any, not many, if any.
How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this?
Welcome back.
I don't know.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. How many dudes you know can actually host a show like this? You know? I don't think there's that many. Least of all from New Zealand, which is quite sad, really, at the end of the day. Because this kind of talk, you know, we may all disagree with each other from time to time on broadcasts or whatever, but let's face facts here. None of us who are speaking on these types of radio shows or are hosting them are members of the New World Order elite, okay? I mean, do you see a $1 billion worth of you know, platinum rings or something adorning my fingers? No. It's just not the case. We're all really under the boot heel of these scumbags. And what you were talking about earlier, Kevin, was about the power and wealth scale. You know, like the New World Order at the top, they got all the power and wealth, and the people down the bottom, we've got no power, no wealth. And that's called despotism. The inequality power and authority and wealth is actually really the indicator for how you know you're actually living under despotism. And I don't think that anybody could really argue that point.
You want me to respond to that? We actually live in a covert fascist state, Vince, as you probably know. The word covert meaning hidden, you know. And I think we're headed for an overt fascist state. I've studied history amongst many other things that I've studied, and I've become very much interested in the First World War. And if you look at what happened there, you know, the British Army said, right, well, we'll just do a bit of a barrage, and then we're sending the troops run towards that machine gun, you know. 58,000 casualties in 1 week, you know, Battle of Passchendaele and this sort of thing. Battle of Verdun, 700,000 French casualties, and a similar number of German casualties over a period of about 3 months. And in the end, these guys said, well, we're not lambs going to the slaughter. We're people. Well, of course, they rounded up the ringleaders, charged them with mutiny, sent them to a firing squad. You know, the very first Christmas in that First World War, the Germans approached the British lines carrying trees with candles on them. And the British said, what the hell is going on? They're a bit wary at first. Oh, this is some trigger trap. And they were singing Christmas carols. And in the end, they had this football match. But of course, the general said immediately afterwards, you know, we can't allow this kind of behavior. Anybody that does anything like that again will be shot, will be court-martialed. And it's the same thing now. Anybody who tells the truth, anybody who shows any kind of compassion, caring for society, you are an outcast, basically. Because it's a whole corporate fascist society. And fascism is this melding of corporations, moneylenders, military and government all melded together. That's what fascism is, and that's how Mussolini defined it, corporatism.
That's one of the really sad realities for me, and it actually moves me quite a bit, is that I see these politicians like the Prime Minister John Key, who was the head of the European Bond and Derivatives Trade for 2 years on the board of the Federal Reserve in New York, you know, as Merrill Lynch's representative. And I see him saying that he's going to help the economy and he's going to improve New Zealanders' lives and make a better country. And it breaks my heart to see people believe it.
Well, as I said, unfortunately, most people are scientifically illiterate and they're financially illiterate and they believe this garbage. They think, oh, well, if he's got experience in overseas, you know, currency trading, then he must be a good guy and he must know what he's doing. And this is and unfortunately, you can't correct this generational thing because it's been going on for decades. You can't just suddenly make people aware and awake. You know, we do our best and we might reach 0.1%, 0.2% of the populace, but the vast majority of them are not going to listen to this interview. They're not going to read my book. They're not going to go onto the internet and look at Nature Bats Last, for instance, is a very good website discussing all of these major issues. Well, most people won't bother to do it because they say, oh, why would I bother to do that? Everything's fine. Yeah, we've got this great leader who's leading us straight off the cliff, as it happens. See, one thing I'm very interested in is how between 6 and 20 million Jews, nobody knows the exact number, died in concentration camps at the hands of fascists. And this started off as just an incremental thing. You know, the Nazi party took over and everyone thought, oh, yeah, they're wonderful. They're stimulating the economy. And then it was persecution of Jews and gypsies, and they have to walk in the gutter and they have to wear an armband. Then they have to go and live in a ghetto. And we says, all right, yes, okay, well, we'll wear the armband, yes, we'll go and live in the ghetto. We have to get onto this train because it's a resettlement program. You know, they're looking after us, these wonderful people.
They're removing us from our homes and taking us somewhere we can be safe as opposed to our own private residences, which we own.
And I make the comment, again, I refer to this book the easy way because I comment on this, that most of those Jews didn't really understand their predicament until they were in the gas chamber, which was supposedly a shower room. It was when the gas canister dropped that they actually realized what their predicament was, you know, and they had about between 30 seconds and 5 minutes to live at that stage. And this is the bulk of society. They go around with their ears and, you know, plugged up, their eyes covered, basically stumbling along. Not knowing where they're going or why they're doing it, and not prepared to examine any of the issues.
You know, I blame forced public education for this. It forces people to go away from their parents who might be able to think independently and maybe raise the children on their own, and instead puts them into government indoctrination camps. That's what schools are as far as I'm concerned.
The comment about schools is they basically are designed to give the pupils enough skills and knowledge for them to be useful to the empire, but to deny them the knowledge that they would make them dangerous to the empire. That's the whole purpose of any of this formal education.
So they know everything there is to know about being a slave, but they know bugger all about how to be free.
So I was never taught the money system because this is a taboo subject. You know, this whole idea of basically it's usury, creating money out of thin air, charging interest. I was never taught that at school. I found out much, much later in life how this whole scam works.
You know, had they taught the Bible at school, you would have been taught that, wouldn't you?
Well, the interesting thing, of course, is that that was regarded as usury in the medieval period. Basically, a lot of this started, I think, with King Henry VIII, with the moneylender thing, and overturning the usury laws, and then after that it was basically open slather for the moneylenders. To screw people. You think of Shakespeare and the story of The Merchant of Venice, you know, Shylock and his pound of flesh. And it's all there. Everything that we need to know, the geology, the oil depletion, all of this stuff about atmospherics, it's all been there for decades. In fact, Tyndall worked out that carbon dioxide absorbs CO in the infrared radiation in 1859. You know, a century and a half ago, and re-radiates it and causes heating. Arrhenius, the Swedish chemist, worked out that we were in for a global warming problem in 1896. So this whole thing is about just feeding the general populace the bits of information that they want you to have and denying you the real information that's important. Scary. Mm. Really is scary. This lack of knowledge, lack of information flow. But you understand why, because the people that are running the system, it's for their benefit. It's not for our benefit. And it's been the case, you know, for centuries.
And as you said, the solution to all of this is everybody's got to start using less energy and start more permaculture. Just making sure if you've got plants that you're planting and they work together in a symbiotic relationship in a field of green, as it were. And it, like, the real problem with farming now, and particularly agricultural practice, which interestingly enough is the reason why human population has been able to flourish the way it has in the 20th century, is actually because of this single crop farming practice,
which depletes all the nutrients out of the soil, and therefore, if there's no nutrients in the soil, how many nutrients are you going to be in your food? So there we have our obesity crisis. We've got our immune systems are weak as anything that you could ever conceive of. It's just a bad frickin' idea. So we've got permaculture there. That's a good idea in terms of reducing our energy use. You know, I'm in favour of getting a lot of these patents, which have been classified under national security, released to the public in terms of energy creation devices that have been made over the years and classified, because they really threaten the oil cartel's hold on, you know, global energy production. You know what I'm saying? Do you agree to that, or do you?
Yes, there were actually electric cars that were produced for a short period in America, and then they were killed off. Now, I mean, I'm not a great fan of electric cars, but they were better than, you know, gas-guzzling SUVs, etc. And the oil companies just killed them off because they did not want competition.
Yeah.
And this is the world we live in. People in power who say, right, we'll kill off the competition, we'll kill off the truth, we'll kill off everything. And they're going to kill the people eventually.
Mm. You know, and sooner or later, somebody's going to say, you know what, I've had enough, and then try and kill the oil company executives and try and kill the politicians. And then the politicians will just retaliate and they'll start killing everybody, you know? It's like, I don't see a positive way out of this unless it is a slow transition to a better world through education and through, by education, I mean truth! Freaking getting out there, you know, and it's just so rare. But yeah,
the scary thing is, Vince, that these people with the vested interest.
We've only got 5 seconds. It's too late, Kevin. All right.
Great to talk to you.
Thanks, mate.